Welcome to Banking Reinvented, Commercial Banking Takeover. This limited series goes straight to the front lines of commercial banking. I'm Alex Jimenez, and in each episode, I'll be speaking with industry leaders about the bold shifts transforming the sector from rewiring relationship management to modernizing trade finance, payments, and onboarding. Powered by Backbase Unlock Growth Mode movement, these conversations pull back the curtain on what it takes to move from maintenance to momentum.
Welcome to Banking Reinvented Unlock Growth Mode. I'm Alex Jimenez. Today's guest has shaped the real-time payments conversation from multiple vantage points: strategy, fraud, identity, and advisory. Peter Tapling is Managing Director of PTAP Advisory, a board member at the U.S. Faster Payment Council, and one of the go-to experts when banks want to modernize money movement without compromising security. Peter, great to have you.
Alex, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So is it PTAP Advisory? Did I say that right?
You did. You got it right. PTAP Advisory. I'm actually not very creative. It's just first initial in the first syllable of my last name. But
oh, I like it, but I wasn't sure. So let's dive right into the world of faster payments. So what's a common myth you hear about faster payments, and why does it persist?
Yeah. Well, the phrase that I hear all the time, and I hate it, so I almost don't want to repeat it, thus propagating its popularity, but faster payments equals faster fraud. At the end of the day, bad guys are going to be going after whatever form of payment that we have. Indeed, providing instant payments to customers changes the timing in which we financial institutions need to do risk management, but it doesn't inherently change the fraud equation in that we're still fighting the same kinds of bad guys. We have an additional challenge in that we're also working very hard to get our customers to protect themselves, because very prevalent today is scams, which is a form of fraud, but it's a very different kind of fraud than we've been fighting for 40 years.
I love that that comment. Just recently, I saw a report from the Fed that talked about the growing payments fraud, and the growing form was checks. So, because it's just easier to game that than some of the digital methods. So that was interesting. So you've advised everyone from NACHA to early warning to the Fed. What's the core challenge most banks face when modernizing their payment system?
I would say the biggest core challenge is momentum. They have a bunch of momentum around the way they did things before. And as different payment schemes came into the financial institution, they came in silos. So today, a popular topic is to talk about payment orchestration, where a payment request comes in from a customer, and based on all of the capabilities we have, I'm going to route that payment the right way, air quotes. The challenge is, the assumption there is that the party who's going to route that payment has control over all those different payment mechanisms, and that the products built by the bank. So I'm not talking technology now, but I'm talking the product that the bank is offering to their business customer. The products aren't in sync. And so while on the one hand, it's great to stand at a whiteboard and draw one line in with a circle and then a bunch of different lines out, and it all looks like it's going to, happen quite easily. Banks have, the NACHA has been around, the ACH network's been around for 50 years now. They just had their 50-year anniversary. Credit cards, debit cards, wire, all of those grew up in different silos. And in order to move forward with a true modern payment strategy, financial institutions need to break down those silos, treat payments as a line of business, which is a service line to all the other lines of business.
Yeah, that makes me think of all the banks that have their payments committee, or tried to have a payment czar within the bank, but yet you still have credit card and cards, debit cards and ACH and wire, all of them separately managed and separate operations. So, what is a payment czar going to do?
Or you create the payment czar and you tell them, hey, you're the payment czar, you're in charge of check, ACH, and wire. Well, then you're not really the czar, because there's this card thing and instant payments and all this other stuff.
Back in 1999, I headed the payments committee at what was Fleet Bank at the time. And it really was just getting everybody together to talk to each other, because, you know, we couldn't herd the cats that led all the payments areas. So that reminds me of those difficult days. And I don't think it's gotten any better.
I was just going to say that was 1999, you know, so we're talking 30, 25 years later. And in many financial institutions, I think you could still sit, be a fly on the wall and hear the same conversation.
Oh, absolutely. You know, with so many stakeholders, banks, fintechs, regulators, who do you think is actually best positioned to lead in faster commercial payments?
Well, when you say lead in faster commercial statements, I'm going to read that as create a position where corporations begin to adopt instant payments, FedNow and RTP particularly. There are many things have to happen. One of the challenges that we have in the United States, we decided to come to the market. We are being market driven in our adoption of instant payments. What that means is no one's driving the bus. The networks are out there. The networks are knocking on doors saying, hey, you should sign up for my network. But then the financial institutions are like, well, why should I? Which one should I join? And we also have this weird characteristic in the United States that we allow financial institutions to join a network in receive mode only. And while that seemed like at the beginning a way to lessen the risk of banks joining the network, you know, a thought exercise, if every financial institution joined in receive only, how many transactions would we have? You know, the answer being zero. And so the challenge is we have relatively few senders. I think on, you know, on each network, there might be 60 to 75 banks who are registered to be senders. Of those banks, some subset, I'm guessing about 25%, actually have send products that they express to their customers. And so, you know, the first thing that has to happen is financial institutions have to get comfortable with this concept of, yes, I'm going to join the network in a send persona. And yes, I'm going to build products that make these send capabilities available to my commercial customers. Today, why? Speak at AF, you know, in addition to speaking at payments conferences, I speak at the financial professional, the treasury conferences. And so when I'm speaking at AFP and we bring up the topic of instant payments, people are like, why? Like, I understand why you, the bank, are really interested in it. But for me, I now have to hunt and peck who I can send to and which one of my subsidiaries, banks that are banks that can do this and can't do this. And I just don't need to do that right now.
I had the same exact experience 6 years ago or so. I presented at the Utah AFP chapter, the future of payments. And of course, I talked about faster payments and nobody cared. I got more questions about blockchain than I did on that than I did on RTP. How should commercial banks be thinking about balancing speed with risk mitigation? Since that seems to be the excuse that a lot of banks use, quote unquote excuse, the banks use for not be senders.
Okay, correct. I think one of the reasons that financial institutions do not join in send persona is this fear about fraud, which is, it feels to me as though it's a little bit misplaced. This concept of an irrevocable payment has been around for 150 years in the wire transaction. So we've built bank products that put rules in front of customers that advise them, when you go ahead and make one of these payments, the payment's gone. Like, I can help you. I can talk to the other side. We might be able to remediate it, but the payment itself is irrevocable. Now, mind you, people like that, right? There are good reasons for payments to be irrevocable. I have finality in the business arrangement between the sender and the receiver. And if you think of things like a ship arrives at the port of Los Angeles. It takes the container off of the ship, puts it on a truck. That truck can't leave until there's been a payment, and that payment needs to be final. And so the concept of an instant payment in that scenario is very, very efficient with regard to the payment. So you asked a question that I'll get back to, which is, you know, how is it that commercial financial, you know, banks that serve treasury operations should be thinking about this? They need to be thinking at it from the product in, not from the rail out. they're very focused on the rail and oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to have to join this rail and I have to do things in 5 seconds and my core is not actually real time. And what happens when I'm down for 4 hours overnight? And they're very focused on the back end problems, which are largely solved or solvable. What they're not thinking about, and this is what happens when financial institutions tick the box, fill out the form and say, yes, I am now going to be an Ascend profile on the network, but nothing happens. And nothing happens because they didn't think through the product side of it, which is how am I going to take these capabilities and express them to my customers? And which customers am I going to offer these products to? So I always, when I get into these conversations and you comment, I do a fair bit of strategy work for community financial institutions and financial institutions that are afraid never call me. The ones that want to do something call me and say, hey, help us think through how we can make this work. And where I try and steer them first is on the commercial side. You know your business customers better than I do as a consultant. So let's walk through your business customers and kind of put them into buckets and figure out which ones have use cases that existentially benefit from the things that the instant payment rails can do. 24/7 by 365. It turns out that instant in many cases is less important than the fact that I can do a payment on Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. And so there's a lot of reasons that that individual corporations want to be able to move payments at their convenience and not at the bank's convenience. And I tell them, focus on finding collections of customers that have those problems and then work inward from there. Now build a product, right? What's a product in a financial institution? It's a set of agreements. There might be some technology, an API or a user interface or whatever. But the most important thing is, what's the business arrangement between me and this customer under which I'm going to make this new capability available?
I've had, for the past few years, I've had discussions with commercial banks, particularly in the community banking space, where I talk about faster payments and I ask them whether they're sending. And generally the answer is no. When I prod them a little bit, the response is, well, we don't have anything to sell because we can't sell a rail, which I understand. And so I push, right. So I push back and say, okay, well then, why can't you come up with use cases? And generally the answer I get, not exactly in this blunt format, but is FIS, Fiserv, Jack Henry, or any of my other payment providers have not given me a product to sell. And therefore, I don't know what I'm selling. I can't sell the rail. What would you say about that? And how would you approach that discussion?
One, I agree with the statement, I can't sell a rail. Because we talked about it is earlier when we talked to the AFP groups, they don't care. Like we say FedNow and RTP, they're like, yeah, so what? I don't care. But you know, there's a phrase I always use in this faster payments conversation. Do you want your money now or do you want your money later? Everyone will answer that question the exact same way. Of course I want my money now, right? And so there are use cases out there. You're never going to sell the rail. You're going to sell a product. You have to package a product. You have to be creative and create a product of value to either one of the other challenges that I run into at community banks is they think of all their customers in the whole, in the aggregate. So they think with a broad brush, how am I going to, air quotes, offer this to my business customers? Well, you're probably not going to come out and say, oh, hey, here's a new rail, go make a payment if you want to. But if you solve a problem for them, then they're very interested. You know, one of the use cases that I've seen that's gotten a lot of uptake and it's been very popular is it's in fleet management for over the road truckers. So an over the road trucker drops his load Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. He's got to go fill up with fuel. And the way it would work historically is he'd fill out a bunch of paper, he'd fax it in, he'd get a check 7 days from now, right? Well, filling up an over the road truck is a $1,200 exercise. And so, you know, there is a financial institution that created for their over the road trucking customer a mechanism that uses RTP that when the trucker comes in and says electronically, yes, I've finished my load and it gets approved, a payment goes instantly into that trucker's bank account so they can now move on, right? They now have the money. So, I mean, that's not saying I'm going to offer faster payments to all my business customers. That's solving a problem for a set of business customers. And that's the way people need to be thinking about this.
Absolutely. And it goes to the fact that a lot of community banks, they just don't have product managers, right? They have vendor managers who manage the responsibilities or the products and services that their core providers give them or the payments providers give them. So it's really a different way of thinking that, you know, many organizations haven't had to do because, just as you said, ACH is 50 years old. Those processes have been baked for a long, long time. So you don't really need someone to come up with a new idea because it's been done.
Well, and you know, when a financial institution tells me I can't sell a rail, my response to them is, banks are less about storing money these days and more about moving money. And if you look at your asset value, so maybe your asset value is $8 billion. Now go and get some reports out of your payment, your silos, your payment silos. How much card volume are you doing? How much ACH volume are you doing? How much wire volume are you doing? How much check volume are you doing? If you're an $8 billion financial institution, I'm pretty sure that the amount of money you're moving is well over $45 billion. And so instant payments is just another way to move that money. And when you move money for customers, you know, if you sit in the treasury operations group and you listen to customers calling in, at, you know, between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock on any given day, half of those calls will be, where the heck is my payment? And so this product solves that problem.
Where are commercial institutions most vulnerable right now? Is it identity, authentication, fraud?
From a technology perspective, you mean? I think, you know, for businesses, business email compromise is still a challenge, right? Instant payments doesn't change the equation there, by the way. You know, so again, it's not faster payments, faster fraud. Business email compromise is a challenge in business processes within a financial institution and between the financial institution and their customer. But the bottom line is, I think that businesses, to a person, every business payments person that I speak to, for inbound payments, what they say is, look, I don't care what the rail is. If my customer wants to pay me a given way, I want to take the money. And if they want to walk wheelbarrows full of pennies into my office, I'm going to take them, right? On the way out, they want to be able to have, you know, the most important thing is visibility and timing, being able to send payments when I want to send payments. Sometimes I hear people say, well, why would I not want an instant payment? Because when I write a check, you know, that check doesn't clear for 7 days. Well, the answer is, you don't know that the check's not going to clear in 7 days. It could clear in 2. It could clear in 50. You have no visibility, right? And so, you know, this precision that you can get with instant payments, if I don't want to pay somebody until Thursday, then don't pay them until Thursday. Like literally Thursday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I hit the button.
The days of playing the float are long gone. What are some best in class examples you've seen on faster payments actually improving commercial workflows?
Yeah, well, I talked about the one very specific use case, which, like I said, is in production and is very successful. And it required the financial institution to put a focus on, hey, what do my customers want? I think that most of the send activity on the instant payment rails today is actually happening through fintechs. If you look at the volume of transactions going on, it's a fintech that has a partnership with a financial institution, and that fintech's driving all the volume. And so if you would ask me, you know, we were having a conversation just a second ago about, well, what would you tell a commercial bank? You know, one of the risks to a commercial bank is if you don't do anything about this, businesses want it and they're going to go get it and they're going to end up getting it through a fintech. And if you're a community financial institution, chances are you're not the party that's banking that fintech, so you're not going to see that volume. And so you need to be creative, whether it's a product that you build yourself, whether you rely on your relationship with your core provider and the business products that they offer, whether you partner with some sort of third party, you know, that's going to either build or you buy a product that you can then plug in and offer to your customers. But the bottom line is you need to understand your customers. You need to focus on the use cases within your customer base. So it's easy for me to sit here on the phone and say, oh, you know, let's pick a use case. Early wage access. Well, early wage access makes no sense if you give them the money over ACH, right? Because it's 2 days later. So it's a natural for instant payments. If somebody works the 4 p.m. to midnight shift at a restaurant and they want to get paid out at one in the morning on a Sunday, instant payments is purpose built for that kind of transaction. Now, are you the bank going to build an early wage access platform? Probably not. So that would be something where you partner with somebody who offers that product. And so without getting into the lightning rod that early wage access has become, I just wanted to point out that that's, you have to look for use cases where the existential characteristics of the use case benefit from instant payments.
So the danger is similar to, banks sort of gave up the process, the P2P process that PayPal, Venmo, Cash App has taken, right? That's a use case that banks have been trying to combat with Zelle and other methods because, you know, somebody figure out how to do it better. Stripe took a chunk out of banks' business because they did it better than the banks could do it. So it could be the same thing, right? The FTP, faster payments through RTP or FedNow are actually being driven by a fintechs instead of banks, where, you know, rightly so, they should be there, particularly given that RTP is owned by a group of banks.
Yeah, and I think that the, you go back to 1999, 2000, PayPal came out, banks looked at it askance. Well, what's that thing over there? That's a ridiculous idea. Why would anyone want to do that? And then about 3 years later, they're looking at billions of dollars coming off their balance sheet and sitting on PayPal's balance sheet, right? And so I think that's, you brought it up. It's a great example of a situation where, regardless of what the bank thought, customers wanted that capability and they were going to go wherever they wanted to go to get that capability. In the commercial space, be very cognizant of companies like Bill.com and QuickBooks, right? Because those companies are, when a bank says to me, oh, I can't make any money doing instant payments. Well, I'm a small business. Many of my customers pay me through Bill.com. And every time I get paid, I get a little button from Bill.com that says, do you want to get this payment instantly? Pay 1%, right? So I don't usually pay the 1%, but I did one time just so that I could experience the effort, and it worked. Like literally by the time I got out of the Bill app and I got into my bank app, the money was there. So, you know, I'm fortunate. I'm not in a situation where I'm trying to drive cash flow to manage my business, et cetera, et cetera. But there are situations where having that instant availability for money is very important. And so for businesses in your portfolio where they have that kind of cash flow need, if you're not offering them a way to do this, then they're going to go to somebody who does. And first of all, you don't want them to go to anybody else. Second of all, if they do go to somebody else, you want the money to stay in your bank. Thirdly, you do not want them to close the bank account because you're not participating at all and move to another bank.
Should banks be thinking about prioritizing FedNow, RTP, and other rails, or should they be using all the rails that are available?
We are terrible in the payment space at getting rid of anything. You probably just saw the headline that in a year or two, the Fed's going to stop minting pennies. Well, we're going to see pennies for a dozen years or more. Like, pennies are not going away. So I think, yes, they're going to have to work with all of them. Relative to FedNow versus RTP today, RTP has the reach, right? They reach more demand deposit accounts than the Federal Reserve does with FedNow. But the Fed has a card they've not played yet in their relationship with the Bureau of Fiscal Service. So if BFS pops up one day and says all all payments of X type heretofore are going to be made over FedNow, people will be rushing to join FedNow and be on that network because they don't want that class of payments to not be able to be exchanged with their customers. So I think that, you know, we're in a nascent time for the networks, meaning, you know, I literally just gave this presentation yesterday and I took all the volume and the value for Zelle, RTP, and FedNow and put them all on one graph. Well, you know, Zelle's like this, RTP's down here, and you can't even see FedNow, right? But in that graph, if you go back far enough in Zelle, there was a point in time when Zelle was at that level, right? And so it is about driving adoption. It is about driving value. And importantly for both the networks and the financial institution, it's about driving balanced volume. So today, most of the payment volume by number, not by dollar value, but by number, most of the payment payment volume is driven by what I call reverse funnel use cases. There's one party that needs to pay a whole bunch of other parties. So that's either some sort of disbursement thing. It's a wallet payout. You know, you're getting money out of DraftKings or Robinhood or, you know, PayPal, Venmo, whatever. And while those are interesting, you know, and bill.com sending them paying, you know, charging 1% or whatever, while those are interesting, those aren't really indicative of a very healthy, you know, bi-directional network between a bunch of participants. And so, you know, when we begin to get there, and I believe we will, when we begin to get there, you're going to see the activity in the two networks begin to level out. We have a history in the United States of having two operators of everything. You know, so we got two ACHs, two wire systems. So the fact that we have two networks is not particularly challenging. What makes it challenging is at today's volumes, when you take the number of transactions you're doing and the cost that the cost of implementing everything and you divide those numbers, it's like, oh my God, it feels like $5 a transaction that I'm paying. Well, that problem's going to go away when we start adding zeros to the number of transactions we're doing.
It's always interesting talking to payments people from outside of the US. They can't believe we have so many rails, right? It's like, hey, you're in Canada, you're using Intersect for just about everything. If you're in Europe and other places, there's only really one rail. And here we have two of everything. It's and if we even go back in time and go back to the Czech world, you know, all the clearinghouses we had so many. Yes. If a commercial bank wanted to adopt faster payments, but didn't have a clear roadmap, where would you tell them to start?
I would start with the end. You know, I worked with Early Warning when we launched Zelle, and I saw a lot of this in Zelle. One of the reasons I have PTAP Advisory was my experience at Early Warning. And I had to present the Zelle business case to 200 plus financial institutions, and everybody wanted to have the presentation. And when I asked them why they're doing it, nobody ever had a good answer. They were doing it because JPMorgan Chase was doing it. And, oh my gosh, it's a new thing and I have to be there. And so one of the reasons I formed PTAP Advisory is I thought, you know, I think that there's a way that I can help financial institutions by stepping back and saying, why am I doing this? Like, if I'm going to offer Zelle, great. I'm going to offer a P2P product. Why am I going to do it, right? I have this conversation with people, with financial institutions who choose to join the instant payments networks, and they do it in receive mode, and they don't say anything. And I get very frustrated because I'm like, you just created a brand new product that's got a lot of value for your customer. Say something. Tell them this is what we're doing. This is the future. This is what we're doing now. This is what we plan to do in the future. And so, you know, for on the commercial side, focus on those customers. Talk to the customers. You really only need one customer who does any kind of payment volume to make it worth it for you to implement instant payments in a send persona and support that customer. And if that customer is doing thousands of payments a month, you get to cut your teeth on them. You get to learn about the process, and you're going to provide a ton of value to them. And if you're in those lines of businesses, chances are it's not just one customer who has that same, you know, the problems that can be served by that same product. And so kind of starting with the back end, and it's got to be somewhat, to your point of not having a product manager in the community financial institution, again, another thing I hear a lot of is, oh, well, I'm going to go talk to my customers and ask them, what use cases do you have for instant payments? They can't answer the question. They have no idea what that means. And so you need to be able to ask them about their business, ask them about their pain points when it comes to payments and when it comes to managing their business relationships. What you end up finding out is, you know, for people who do a lot of business on the weekends, they have piles of cash somewhere, right? You can save them those piles of cash. Risky, hard to manage, a lot of shrinkage. There's a reason that you don't want to do that. And I'm talking about upstanding businesses, of course, but we'll leave that aside.
Where do you see faster payments intersecting with embedded finance and open banking in the next 18 months?
Yeah, well, I think that, and I'm gonna throw another one in there, agentic AI, right? So the concept of AI and agentic AI, where there are agents who are seeing things happen, and when a certain set of conditions is met, payments go out the door. That can be pretty powerful. It's futuristic right now. I have not seen a good application of it in the wild, but I can envision a lot of ways that could be very valuable. Small businesses always have the problem of, you know, Marge is the accountant. I got to wait for Marge to get in. And if I really need to make a payment or write a check on a Saturday, I need to call Marge in from the company picnic. And have her go into the office and write the check. Well, that kind of stuff can really be fully automated. And when, you know, the write the check problem is, now I have all this visibility issue. Okay, well, Marge wrote the check. Where's the check? Oh, well, you know, she gave it to Bob. Bob's going to give it to the company, or she put it in the mail, or it's in, you know, where is it? You don't have any of those where is it problems with instant payments. So I think that, you know, one of the reasons to go to embedded anything, right, is that I want the payment to be a natural part of the flow of a business transaction, and I want to automate as much as possible. We've been on an automation run for 30, 40, 50 years, right, trying to automate the heck out of our businesses. And in every automated process, it comes to a full stop at a point in time that a payment needs to be made, right? And so embedded, when we start driving towards embedded processes where the automated processes at the company, when they hit the point where they make a payment, they're just going to send something off to the bank. And this is where open banking comes in via an API. By the way, that API is accessed by the company under some kind of agreement between the company and the bank that gives everybody their T's and C's and their liability and all that kind of stuff. But if I'm going to be doing hundreds of thousands of these, I don't want to have people talking to each other. I want to automate it as much as possible. So I'm in the middle of my business process. I fire an API call off to the bank. The bank does its thing. It responds to me, says, yep, payment was made. Carry on with the rest of your stuff, whatever your stuff is, right? I think that there is a lot of opportunity for this automation. Financial institutions complain that the FF&Js of the world are not giving them the products that they want. Well, businesses complain that their vendors aren't giving them the products that they want, right? So, you know, the businesses sit in these, are going to listen to this podcast and saying, embedded what? I can't get that out of Microsoft Dynamics or pick my favorite, you know, ERP platform. It will come. It will come.
That's right. Click to pay is a user case that I hear a lot about when we talk about faster payments, but I don't see it out there often. And we've been talking about it since that was probably the first RTP example that I got directly from RTP.
And when you say click to pay, it's who's clicking and what are they clicking? Like, am I in a mobile app? Am I on the shop floor? Like, yeah. And so, yes. Like, again, use cases. So, I live in Chicago in the state of Illinois. It is by law, a liquor distributor, when they pull the truck up behind a bar, must get payment before they leave the delivery. And it turns out that the only payment mechanisms that are accepted are cash or check. Don't tell me why check is one of the options, right? But it has to do with kind of finality. The state wants to know who owns this alcohol at this point in time. And so that's a natural for instant payments. But what does it require? It requires every guy that's driving a beer truck to have an app that says, hey, you need to pay me. It requires every guy that's standing behind the bar at 2 o'clock in the afternoon to understand how to, you know, in a fully automated, accept a request for payment from the distributor, say, yes, these are all the things that are in, that are being delivered, move the money. Again, is all of that technically possible? Yes. There's an education, there's a leap we need to make to get to where we have the automation. And then this is an interesting case because now we have a set of laws where written into the law is cash or check. It never contemplated an instant payment. And so, well, you know, I, as you are probably hearing in this conversation, I am very pro instant payments. I think the future for instant payments is bright, but I think one of the, what a lot of the benefits that are given by instant payments, visibility, finality, 24/7/365, also have to change business processes that have encoded into the business process a check or a wire.
And our regulations have not kept up with technology. You know, it's amazing some of the regulations that we've had to deal with that were written in the 1990s, 1980s, and yet here we are. So, Peter, if there is one mindset shift you want commercial banking leaders to walk away with, what is it?
It's the internal to external thing. Like, stop thinking I have to sell a rail. You're not selling a rail. The rail is an enabler. What you're selling is a bunch of features. You're selling characteristics of a payment. And there's a codicil to that. I guess, you know, an add-on to that is don't ask your customer, you know, what are you going to do with instant payments? They don't know. But if you go to your customer and you say, do you ever have a problem where you have to move money on a Saturday afternoon? I'm pretty sure they're going to say yes. I have run businesses where at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the accountant is running around trying to get people to approve stuff and sign off because she's got to get a wire queued up before the wire room closes so that that money can go off to the supplier, the vendor, the partner, whatever, because we agreed that we would pay that day. Well, all of that timing stuff, we get relief from that in instant payments. And so, you know, that kind of accountant running around for a wire is, yes, it's very visual, but it's not going to drive a lot of volume. What's going to drive volume is that automation and that automation that happens off hours.
Thanks, Peter, for this fantastic discussion on faster payments. It's one of my favorite topics in banking, so you can probably hear that from my voice.
Well, we started having this conversation about 10 or 15 years ago, Alex, so let's hope we're not still having it 10 or 15 years from now.
Absolutely. I think I met you when you came to a bank to tell us about faster payments. So
probably. And, I think, again, another quippish line that I use is, we will know we have succeeded with faster payments when we drop the word faster. It's just a payment. It's the way I expect the payment to work.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It was great having you.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
You've been listening to Banking Reinvented by Backcase. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn, where we share key takeaways, exclusive content, and behind-the-scenes perspectives to help your bank lead the charge to our modern growth.